Welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Dan Yassin, and I'm a local anti-war and anti-empire activist. Jerry Bill is at the controls. We are in our 2015 Holiday Pledge Drive. We need your support. Please call 1-800-439-5732, or you can go to www.kpfa.org or www.kfcf.org and pledge online. KFCF is completely listener-sponsored and supported. We receive no money from the government or from underwriting sources. This is our 40th year of bringing great community radio programming to Central California. Please call 1-800-439-5732 or go online at www.kpfa.org or www.kfcf.org to pledge online. Today is December 16, 2015, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policy and the actions of the military-industrial governmental surveillance complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the people here in America, but also for the people in other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Kevin Barrett on telephone with us. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, hello, Dan.
Thank you for being my guest on the show. Dr. Kevin Barrett, a PhD Arabist Islamologist, is one of America's best-known critics of the war on terror. He's host of Truth Jihad Radio, a hard-driving weekly live call-in radio show. He also has appeared many times on Fox, CNN, PBS, and other broadcast outlets, and has inspired feature stories and op-eds in the New York Times, the Christian Science Monitor, the Chicago Tribune, and other leading publications. His books include Truth Jihad, My Epic Struggle Against the 9/11 Big Lie, 9/11 and American Empire, Christian, Jews, and Muslims Speak Out, Questioning the War on Terror, a Primer for Obama Voters, and the latest, We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, Freethinkers Question the French 9/11. Kevin, you have written that most of the so-called terrorist attacks since 9/11 have been false flag attacks. Let's talk about, in this light, the San Bernardino and shooting and the two Paris attack. But first, define for our audience, what is a false flag attack?
Well, the term false flag, Dan, comes from naval warfare. When a ship wanted to get close enough to attack another ship, it might fly the flag of a friendly country, or it might conduct an attack against another ship flying the flag of a different country or entity in order to trick the one side into going to war against another side. And since those days, we've seen this technique refined. Today, it's a common technique for false flags are used for two main purposes. One is to start a war or intensify public sentiment for war. And then secondly, they're used to create a climate of fear so that populations rally behind authoritarian leadership and give up their liberties. And their examples of this are Legion, one of the very best known examples that is essentially accepted by all historians is the false flag wave of terror launched by Operation Gladio during the Cold War. Virtually all of the terrorism attributed to left-wingers during the Cold War, that is Baader-Meinhof gang, the Red Brigades, the Brabant shootings, the Bologna train station bombing, pretty much all of the biggest attacks that murdered hundreds and actually thousands of innocent civilians in Europe, if you count Turkey, these were carried out not by left-wing radicals, as everybody was told in the newspapers, but by the American Pentagon. Our Joint Chiefs of Staff commanded a Gladio group of stay-behind paramilitary operatives in Europe, and they went around murdering people, bombing people, shooting people, and then it was attributed to left-wingers. So now there's a program called Gladio B, according to FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds, and it has been launching all of the big false flags attributed to Muslims, including 9/11, London, 7/7, Bali, Madrid, Mumbai, and more recently Paris, and apparently San Bernardino.
Okay, let's start with the San Bernardino shooting and give us your take on that.
Right. It looked really strange from the get-go. You know, the first thing that appeared on the internet was a video by a woman who works at the facility, and she was filming police and military or militarized police forces arriving and saying, oh, it's a drill, it's another drill. And the Los Angeles Times then reported that this facility had an active shooter drill every single month. Well, you know, this must have been the only facility of its kind to have an active shooter drill every month. And then we're told it was just a coincidence that this was the facility that was targeted by these actual active shooters. If you believe that coincidence, you might also believe that the biggest national security special event day in U.S. history, which was scheduled months ahead for September 11, 2001, a total of 46 drills were involved in leading up to and occurring on 9/11. On September 11, 2001 itself, there was even a live fly plane into building drill, and that drill went live, and it became what we know of as those attacks. Likewise, on July 7, 2005 in London, we had a drill that mimicked every single bomb location and time. Peter Power of Visor Consultants was on television that day, and he revealed inadvertently, apparently, that his company had been running a drill that envisioned bombs going off at exactly the same four times and locations as the real bombs that went off that day. So we have a long history of false flag attacks coinciding with drills, because that's how the deep state government forces run these attacks. They run them as drills that go live. That allows them to plan for the event, pretending it's just a drill. And then the Team B, which is the people imagining themselves or playing the role of the terrorists or the attackers, just actually do carry out the attack. That's how they run these things. So it's pretty clear now that San Bernardino was another false flag event. We have multiple eyewitnesses who saw that three big, muscular, white paramilitaries did the shooting, not this Bonnie and Clyde Muslim couple that we were told. And it looks like they executed the couple in cold blood. They were handcuffed and shot dead in their car. Their lawyer has come out and called this, and it looks like a false flag. This couple looks like they were innocent, and they were just executed to silence them. So this is the pattern that we've been seeing for many, many years. And it's really interesting that with such evidence out there in public, available to anybody with a search engine, the mainstream media is still covering this stuff up, which makes them complicit in genocide and crimes against humanity of the highest order.
You were in Paris on Friday the 13th, the day of the last Paris attacks. You left just a few hours before the attack. Talk to us about that.
Yes, it was rather disturbing. The 12th, the day before the attacks, I actually spent that afternoon and evening wandering around central Paris with a film crew, talking about how the Charlie Hebdo shootings last January had been a false flag attack, apparently run by this Gladio B terrorism deep state force that answers to some rogue faction of NATO and Israeli intelligence. So I was describing, you know, how we know this and how they pulled off this Charlie Hebdo false flag. As I spent hours actually being interviewed on this on the night of the 12th. And then on the 13th, I flew back from Paris to Chicago, and apparently I left just hours before the Friday the 13th false flag event. When I arrived in Chicago, the news was just breaking, and I was once again appalled. Immediately there were indications showing that this was likely a false flag. It's actually kind of what's puzzling about all of this is that one would expect that professional intelligence community, black operations and paramilitary people like Kraft International, Chris Kyle's outfit, which has apparently been very active in this. They did the killing at the Boston Marathon bombing, and they very likely have been involved in San Bernardino as well. It's amazing that these supposed professionals in murder and mayhem are unable to pull off these events without leaving so much evidence. Some people have even suggested that maybe they're intentionally leaving that evidence just to thumb their noses at the world and say, look, we can get away with this and nobody can stop us. But I think it's time for people to get angry and to say, we're going to stop you.
One of the consequences of these attacks has been rampant Islamophobia that has reached a fever pitch among the American and European public. Who benefits from this?
Well, obviously, the people carrying out these terrorist attacks are the ones who benefit. That is the neoconservative Zionist militarist faction of the West. The people that, you know, it's not any secret that the hardline people in Israel were jumping for joy on September 11th, 2001. Netanyahu could barely restrain himself when he was asked his reaction on that day. He said, "It's very good." So he wasn't the only one. Israelis all over the world were celebrating. A former head of Mossad in Thailand threw a huge victory party celebrating the success of this operation. There were dancing Israeli spies in New York wildly celebrating the destruction of the World Trade Center, high-fiving each other, taking pictures of each other, holding a cigarette lighter, flicking it in front of the burning and exploding towers. Israelis were arrested with vans full of explosives in New York that morning. So Israelis have been just falling all over themselves, cheering every time there's one of these attacks. And it's obvious that that's because they're the ones doing it, along with their allies in the Western deep states. So, you know, this is all part of the Oded Yunon plan to use the West to destroy Israel's enemies in the Middle East by breaking up these countries into tiny little Balkanized entities broken up along ethnic and sectarian lines. And they've done that. Now, that's what 9/11 was all about. Even Richard Clark, or rather General Wesley Clark, revealed this. He said right after 9/11 he was approached by a neocon who said, we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, and he listed them. And they're exactly the same countries that were the problem for Israel. Iraq, Libya, Syria, Lebanon, Sudan, and finally heading for Iran was the last one on the list. And they haven't quite gotten there yet. They're behind schedule. But that's what this is really all about. The Israelis have hijacked the American military to do their dirty work, smashing and destroying the region around them so that they can continue to expand and ultimately create greater Israel, which will stretch from the Nile to the Euphrates.
You are listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with author and radio host Kevin Barrett. If one gets his news from the mainstream media, he hears the loaded words like radicalized, extremists, and Islamic fundamentalists, as if the Muslim were clear and present danger to the Western civilization. One would only believe that if one ignores history. If it is the American and Western imperialism that is responsible for up to 3 million deaths since 9/11 and over 30 million deaths since World War II. So who are the radical and extremists? Kevin, give us your perspective on American imperialism.
Yes, the real extremists are the neoconservatives. They're a hardline faction in the American military and intelligence corps. They've essentially let us know what their agenda is going back for many decades, starting in the 1960s, when we know from two classmates of the neoconservatives at the University of Chicago who were studying with Leo Strauss, the dean of neoconservatism, that these guys were working in the 1960s on one project, and that was 9/11. They were working over, they were staying up all night doing bull sessions with their professor, Leo Strauss, the founder of neoconservatism, planning a huge false flag event in the United States that would be essentially a coup d'etat by neoconservative Zionists. And we know this because we've heard it from Francis Boyle, who was there. He's currently a law professor at the University of Illinois. And we've also heard it from Stanley Hilton, who was a classmate of Wolfowitz and these same people at the University of Chicago at the same time. So since the 1960s, these people have been planning to destroy democracy in the United States with what became 9/11 and the subsequent series of false flag events. So these people are radicals. The neoconservative philosophy is the philosophy of ultimate radicalism. These people love war. They think war is so good that if peace ever threatened to break out, it would be their duty to prevent it and to make sure that war prevailed. They believe that there's no such thing as truth, no such thing as goodness, that the ultimate truth of the world is that it's a moral void. So the superior man, the Nietzschean Superman, which is them, they think, is obliged to rule through big lies and mass murder. That is the way to live, according to their philosophy, is to be good on the outside but rotten on the inside, and to seek power as ruthlessly and as Machiavellian a manner as you possibly can. So these people are so far, they're vastly more extreme and crazy and violent and vicious than ISIS. ISIS is really just a pale reflection of neoconservatism. And they took over America on September 11th, blowing up the trade towers and murdering 3,000 Americans that day to drag America into their war for greater Israel. This is the most radical project ever. Likewise, the Zionist project itself is a project of a radical, heretical branch of Judaism, which envisioned forcing God's hand by dragging Jews into Palestine. This has been going on for more than 500 years, this project, and it is an extremely radical project that envisages essentially enslaving the entire world to this elite that they're going to create in occupied Palestine. So the real radicals are the neoconservative Zionists, the people who did 9/11, who planned the 9/11 wars, who wasted trillions of dollars and thousands of American lives and millions of other people's lives to create their bloody dream in occupied Palestine, where again they're planning to keep attacking their neighbors, destroying neighboring states like they've destroyed Iraq and Syria, and working on Lebanon in this crazy bloody dream of expanding and creating greater Israel. And there's actually a religious component to this, that they want to bring back what they call the Messiah, or they want to have a so-called Messiah on the throne in Jerusalem. And this, of course, will be the Antichrist, the Dajjal in Islamic terminology, or the Antichrist in Christian terminology. This is not some kind of conspiracy theory or crazy religious dream. This is actually a political project, and they've realized about 80 or 90% of this project. Probably it will ultimately be completed after a nuclear war. These people are trying to create a nuclear war, probably between the U.S. and NATO on one side and Russia on the other side, out of which their state in occupied Palestine will emerge as the most powerful state in the region, if not the world. These people are the radicals. Muslims are not nearly engaged enough politically or militarily to defend themselves. Muslims are just letting themselves be demonized and exterminated by these crazed neoconservative Zionists.
You were in Paris again last Saturday to attend a conference on false flag Islamophobia. Give us just a summary of what transpired at that conference.
Well, this conference was a kind of a counter-conference. We called it a Salon des Refusés, parallel with the art conference in 19th century France that turned out to be, you know, with all the people who refused from the mainstream conference. And we had a mainstream conference sponsored by folks from the University of California, Berkeley. And my paper submission was accepted for that conference back in October. But then after the Friday the 13th false flag event, the atmosphere in Paris became so draconian. People in the Arab and Muslim quarters of Paris were having their doors kicked in. Restaurants were being trashed by armed police who would come in and, you know, break down doors and smash things up on the excuse that there was a little prayer space in the back or something. So it became so, Paris was so terrorized that the people sponsoring this conference told me that I just couldn't present this paper there. You know, my paper was about how Islamophobia is primarily the result of these false flag operations, with 9/11 being, of course, the biggest. And that message, which is accepted by 80% of the world's Muslims and maybe 30% of Americans and Westerners, is just apparently too hot to present at a mainstream university-sponsored conference right after a big event like we had in Paris. So I decided to go anyway and to attend that conference, even though I wasn't presenting a paper. And then I helped organize this alternative conference, the False Flag Islamophobia Conference, which took place the day after, which was last Saturday. Professor Tony Hall and I, Hall is from the University of Lethbridge, organized this conference, brought in about, you know, 8 or 10 of the world's best analysts of false flag terror and media deceptions, and it went off very well. It's a 4-hour video. It's now archived on YouTube, and anybody can find it just by feeding False Flag Islamophobia Conference into a search engine.
You have written quite a bit about 9/11, and you have called it, you have written a couple of books as well, and you have called it a big lie. Here we are, 14 years later. I know you have mentioned it a few times earlier in the program, but just give us a brief summary of your understanding of 9/11.
Well, if there's anybody listening to this program who doesn't yet understand that 9/11 had nothing to do with any hijackers or hijackings or Arabs or Muslims or bin Laden, all I can say is, you know, it's time for you to feed the term World Trade Center Building 7 into a search engine. Maybe you could look at a 3-minute video called WTC7, The Smoking Gun of 9/11. And in that video, you will watch the World Trade Center Building 7 being blown up after witnesses report a countdown on police radio. You can watch film of the people being chased away from the building by people in uniform saying, "Get away, get away, that building's about to blow up." You can see the building coming down at free fall acceleration for the first 2.5 seconds. There's absolutely no question that Building 7 was a demolition. Europe's top demolition expert Danny Jawenko said that on television, and then suddenly died of a car accident shortly thereafter. So if you look at Building 7 carefully, you look at the overinsured Zionist landlord Larry Silverstein's confession on national television that he pulled or demolished Building 7, you happen to notice that Silverstein is actually very close to Netanyahu. You know, this is enough. Building 7 is enough. Anybody who looks closely at that, you know, sees that it was reported down 20 minutes before it came down and so on, will quickly, in, you know, with a minimum amount of research, understand what 9/11 was. So once we get that, you know, then we have to realize why this was done. You know, it was shock and awe, designed to traumatize the American people. We know that from Martha Stout's research that she reported in her book The Paranoia Switch, that about half the American population suffered from clinical PTSD due to these images they watched on 9/11. And that was designed to implant Islamophobia deep into the subconscious of the people. And it worked. And I knew, and I've been saying since I figured this out in 2004, actually late 2003, that this was not just about launching the wars on Afghanistan and Iraq. This was about a permanent war on Islam on behalf of Greater Israel. They're planning to keep killing Muslims for over 100 years, bankrupting Western countries. They've already nearly bankrupted the United States. This is a 100 years war, and they told us that. It's a war that will not end in our lifetimes.
Kevin, I think we are running out of time. Tell our audience, thank you for being my guest, and just tell our audience how they can get your book and follow what you're doing.
Well, they can go to my website, which is truthjihad.com, and take it from there. My latest book is We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, so you could feed that into a search engine as well.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Yeah. We are in our 2015 Holiday Pledge Drive. We need your support. Please call 1-800-439-5732 or you can go to www.kpfa.org or www.kfcf.org and pledge online. All the money donated on air supports KFCF Radio directly. Even though the billing goes through KPFA, it all comes back to us. Only 1 in 10 regular listeners to KFCF is a subscriber. Many more people who us should become listener sponsors. We need to expand our membership. If you are a frequent listener, we want and need your support. KFCF provides programming that cannot be heard anywhere else in Central California. This includes the wide spectrum of excellent programs from KPFA, such as Democracy Now!, Against the Grain, Flashpoint, Guns and Butter, and great locally produced programming like Wasteland of the Free, Stirred Up, Down in the Valley, Down on the Farm, Ideas on the Edge, Street Heat, and of course this program, Speaking Truth to Empire, where you can hear interviews with authors, bloggers, and activists like Chris Hedges, Andre Volchek, Cindy Sheehan, Maria Benjamin, Kathy Kelly, Dr. Paul Clegg Roberts, David Swanson, and author and radio host Kevin Barrett, which you heard today. Only on KFCF you heard progressive voices like these. We need your support to continue to do this important work. Do what you can. A check for $50, $100, $200, or $500 will go a long way to keep KFCF continue its mission. A pledge of $25 qualifies you to become a voting member of the Fresno Free College Foundation. Please call 1-800-439-5732 or go online to www.kpfa.org or kfcf.org to pledge online. We have ongoing expenses just like any other business. This includes expenses such as electricity, telephone lines for the studio and office, the satellite link that brings KPFA programming to the valley, rent for the office and transmitter fees, ongoing costs of equipment, supplies and repairs, and numerous other expenses. Your donation buys all of that. And we need to continue get more people that are listening to the show to become member and support KFCF so we can continue to do these programming. KFCF has been an independent voice in the valley for cultural analysis of social labor struggles, racial issues, war and peace issues, criminal justice conflicts, and environmental justice. KFCF is a vital communication link. Please call 1-800-439-5732 or 1-800-HEY-KPFA. Or you can go online to www.kpfa.org or www.kfcf.org and pledge online. You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We were speaking with author and radio host Kevin Barrett. Happy holidays and goodbye until the third Wednesday of next month.